This is Katie.
And this is Sarah.
We're two friends who are kind of obsessed
with a little of this
and a lot of that
and everything in between. Oh my goodness, is it Friday already?
It is.
Well, welcome you guys to Kind of Obsessed. I am Sarah.
I'm Katie.
And we are just thrilled to be here today. We have an amazing guest. His name is Peter. I know I don't want to give too much away, but the man knows his food and his deli meats, and he loves Chinese everything. And so yeah. I can't wait to talk to him. He's really, really cool. Brooklyn native, so that's fun.
Yeah, and he owns a couple of great shops.
Tasty Delights.
Tasty, yes, bagel sound. And Jewish deli shops in Brooklyn. He's going to be telling us all about them, and it'll
be
fun.
Who doesn't love a bagel?
I don't know a single person on earth who doesn't like a bagel.
Well,
do you?
Miss Keto, how can you weave a bagel into your ketosis?
Yeah, little update on the whole keto thing. Let's just say I've been stuffing my face with all things carb lately.
So just carb focused diet?
Just totally carb focused diet. As predicted, and this is what I talked about on our last, or maybe it was a couple podcasts ago, I never diet because I really believe that once you sort of deny yourself something, that you're going to go hoard it. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of exactly what I did. I did try it for maybe like a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks. And
solid 10 to 14
lately,
days.
Yeah.
What a lifestyle change.
Well, the thing is, I wanted to try because I did want to see if I could structure my life a little bit more around less carbs, which I do think is a productive thing to do.
Sure.
But then you and I went to Miami to have a little fun, and there was no fucking way I was going to be depriving myself of good food in Miami. So I let it go, and then I came back, and I was like, you know what? There's this bagel. There's that croissant.
There's that pizza. There's
yeah,
that
the pizza,
pasta.
Exactly.
There's that everything that is
exactly.
good in the world. Yeah,
so,
good. I'm very happy, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. Moving along. On to new obsessions.
Yay! Oh my gosh, we have a big one.
We do.
Like, I don't know if there's enough time, but we are going to try as much as we can. Katie and I just realized, and this is for those of you who don't and do know us, this is rare. We have a lot in common and we're great friends, but to have the same exact obsession.
And we didn't know it because you were,
no clue.
I was like, do you want to do your obsession? And you're like, yes, I have the best obsession ever. And you told me what it was. And then I was like, that is literally my exact same obsession without even discussing it beforehand.
So, much like Sassy, the greatest magazine ever, we have found a brand new cultural
phenomenon.
Zeitgeist. We are obsessed with Love is Blind.
On Netflix, people.
Oh my God. Okay. So
tell them the premise of the show.
The premise is basically exactly like it sounds, but it is a reality TV show hosted by the greats. Nick and Vanessa Lachey.
It all comes full circle because
really
we just talked about Jessica Simpson.
Jessica Simpson and
now,
the pillowy lips. And Nick
I know every time I see Nick Lachey now,
your description
of him.
His pillowy lips. They're beautiful. Vanessa, also pillowy lips.
Yes.
Beautiful girl. So the whole premise is a dating experiment in three parts. The first part is that they meet sight unseen. They're not
in pods.
In pods, which is a terrible word. And they talk and it's emotional connection that they make. And then they can propose after about a week.
Yeah.
Right?
So they go on a number of dates with each other. They can't see each other. They're in separate rooms, but there's like a thin wall between them. And they get to know each other. And then they have the option to one can propose to. I think they start out maybe with like a dozen men and a dozen women, something like that. And you know, they meet each other, and then the ones that make a connection, you can either, you know, I guess the man or the woman can propose before meeting them in person, or as they talk about it, walk away forever, which is kind of dumb because it's like, okay,
the whole
people,
dramatic.
They can
Let's
like,
be honest. Of course.
They could meet each other afterwards. But they do have some people who actually propose to each other on the show, and it sort of follows them through the different stages after that. Like, it
so
shows
the
them meeting each
stage
other.
Is they go on this tropical vacation where, I mean, look, if you can't fall in love on a tropical vacation, then get out of my face.
A place looked incredible. I think they went to Cabo, and I was like making a mental note of that resort because I was like, that place is sick.
Are you going to go with your boyfriend?
Exactly.
I'm
going to go with
him.
Carlton from that.
Oh, God, from the show. We love Carlton. I mean, sorry, we don't love Carlton. We love Cameron.
No, he ended up. Yeah, Cameron. Yeah. Carlton ended up like that relationship.
We
did
can't
not
give. Don't
oh,
not too many spoilers.
On.
I know. But anyway, and then the third part is they go back into real life.
Yeah.
And like they're preparing for their wedding. Now, I don't know about you, Katie, but when I first heard the premise of this show, I was like, ugh, stupid. Go away. Never watching this. Nick and Vanessa. No, totally. Not. It's not happening.
Pressed play.
And done. Like 4 minutes in, I was like, what is happening to my life? I'm crying. I'm involved. I'm trying not to Instagram stalk these people.
Oh, yeah.
But tell me everything that you feel about it.
I mean, I have immersed my entire life in this show for the last couple of weeks.
Couple of weeks. Oh, I just found it on Saturday and I finished it by Monday.
Yeah.
I have some issues.
You do.
I have straight up issues. That's
yeah.
Creepy.
I mean, I
thought there was only going to be three episodes and then I was like, ah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, like the name of the show, Love is Blind, is, I mean, the whole thing, of course, the whole shtick, right, is like, is love blind? Like, can you actually fall in love with somebody without seeing them in person? And, you know, Nick and Lachey and Vanessa Lachey are, you know, pitching this whole thing. Like, we really hope love is blind. I personally feel like it's stupid because I think
yeah, it's so stupid.
Physical, like the physical connection with somebody, not just sex and all
such
that stuff,
whore.
But like that physical connection is part of a relationship. So the idea that it like puts the physicality in this sort of like, yeah. She's you're
no,
laughing
at Starlight
because that I've turned it into
so,
a philosophical
no,
discussion.
No, not at all. Oh,
okay. I thought you were making fun of me.
The whole thing is just so funny.
Yeah, that you're really, it's kind of like, oh, you're supposed to remove this physical part and fall in love just on an emotional connection. Otherwise you're a shallow person
yeah.
who it's kind of stupid.
Yeah.
But it's yeah. also stupid. Okay. So I also have tried to really put myself in these people's position and be like, like if I had a wall between me and this other person mm-hmm. and I like would, because the way that they talk about it on the show is like, they developed such a deep connection.
Ridiculous.
And the emotional this and that. And I'm
like they want
come
to,
on.
Like they legitimately want to marry them. It's
right.
not like, oh
in
my
three
gosh,
days.
I can't wait to meet this person and just hang out with them. It's like, I can't imagine
my life
without them.
And want to spend the rest of my life without you, with you. Yeah.
Like the amount of separation you have to be from all other stimuli. Do you know what I mean? Like you're basically hermetically sealed in these pods.
I know. Well, they don't have their devices.
Right.
They don't have their devices.
They can't talk to their friends, their family. They can't even just like look at the J. Crew sale, you know, online. You know, like there's nothing to distract them from this search. One, I think that is kind of an incredible opportunity
yes.
to be able, especially for
Agreed.
Me as a single person, if anybody just wants to put me on something where I just date like 40 dudes, I'm in, but not through a fucking wall. But,
because you want to have sex with all of them.
Yeah. How am I going to know if we're forever,
right.
Katie? Jeez. But yes, that element of physical attraction is, I don't even think it has to do with being shallow because I think you and I know, yes, we definitely can appreciate a hot man, but I think what turns us on more is a mental connection.
Right.
But I probably, if I have this awesome emotional connection to you and then I see you in person and you're just completely the opposite of what I am attracted to, I'm just going to love you as a human,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we're going to be best friends.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not getting to, again, marry you.
Right.
Marry.
Right.
Like what world are we living in that there's such a dearth of emotional connection that you have to propose to someone you've never seen whilst Nick and Vanessa Lachey watch it.
Was it better or worse than arranged marriages?
Arranged marriages, I feel like there are other people bringing
like
in
families.
The idea
yeah.
of what is right for you. And I'm the first to say they probably do know fucking better than me. You know, I get so caught up in all sorts of mishigas. I'm not saying I want to have an arranged marriage.
Oh, because I can set that up for you.
Okay. You
this
cannot.
Weekend.
You can't even set me up with one dude. All of a sudden, I'm getting married.
I don't know any single dudes.
Stop. Whatever. But I just, it's a, No, is all I have to say.
Yeah, but I do love the show. There's something so appealing about it. And to watch, you know, this sort of train wreck for
the
each couple. And I think a lot of it is dramatized. I mean, sometimes I'm just like, oh my God, you guys are so dramatic. Like, you keep talking about how you're
because
so
they're
in love.
Fucking
and
drunk.
I mean.
Oh, I thought you were talking about when they fight. Because I'm like,
well, that's
they are.
True. It,
look, it's, don't get me wrong. Katie and I have had a drink or two, but they are just drinking so much, and they're always fighting because they're 12,
right?
And they're drunk.
Well, it is. At one point, somebody on the show said, like, it's a compressed version of life, which something like that, where it's like, yeah, they basically literally in a 3-week period of time, these people meet each other without, you know, through a wall without seeing each other, agree to get married, then see each other in person, then go on a romantic vacation, then go back to reality to live with each other and then meet the families and then have prepare for the wedding and then have weddings in a, imagine doing that in a 3-week period of time. Talk about an experiment. It's bottom line is it's great TV. And
best,
like, if
TV
you're looking
ever
for binge worthy, stuff to lose yourself in and to
hashtag
have a few
not
laughs,
an ad, but go to Netflix. It is, it's soul burgeoning and crushing all at the same time.
Yeah. And by the way, I cannot wait for season 2.
I can't wait for the finale on Thursday.
Yeah. The wedding.
Holy
crap.
You guys. Okay. You know what? We need a bagel. We need to level this all out.
I need some carbohydrates to chill myself out. So
let me to sleep.
Yeah.
I'm really excited. Okay.
Yeah. Let's talk to Peter about all things bagel and Jewish deli.
I wonder if
and
he
Chinese.
Likes Love is Blind.
We'll find out. We're so happy to welcome Peter Schelsky to the show. Peter was born and raised here in New York City on the Upper East Side. So automatically, he and Sarah are on the same team.
We are going to fight.
Peter is the owner of Schelsky's of Brooklyn, Appetizing and Delicatessen. That's the full name, a fantastic deli in the neighborhood where I work and live in Cobble Hill, Brooklyn. And also owns Schelsky's Brooklyn Bagels, which is a newer endeavor for you, which is in Park Slope, also in Brooklyn. And he comes from the world of food. He has worked in fine dining for many years and also previously owned a catering company, which did cooking classes and so on and so forth. So welcome to the show. We're really happy to be talking to you.
It's great to be here.
I'm already licking my chomps. Is that what they say?
Chops.
Chops. Damn it. I'm so hammered off of water.
You can lick a chomp, though, right?
Or like a chomper.
Why don't you lick a chomp and then let us know how it goes?
I actually saw lamb chomps on Seamless the other day on for a Punjabi restaurant.
I love a typo.
Did you try it?
is that a delicacy?
I ordered from somewhere else.
Oh, shocking.
Smart man.
Yeah.
So you said that you used to own a catering business as well as a cooking school, and I got as hungry as I always am. What kinds of things were you teaching? Because I would like to take a class from you, Peter.
We offered a wide range of stuff, ranging from classic French bistro to regional French and all manners of Asian food. We did a baking class. We did an American barbecue class. A whole bunch of different things.
Wow, that's so eclectic.
We did Italian American and we did actual Italian, and for a bunch of years we did it for about 7 years, it was fun for quite a while, but it was a lot of schlep. And
who likes a schlep?
No, yeah, it's just a lot of heavy lifting physically. Yeah. A lot of I was carrying around milk crates of equipment and food, and you live in a fifth floor walk up. Great.
So what brought you to open up Schelsky's? And tell us a little bit about what Schelsky's is.
Sure. So first, to your first question, every year for the last 4 years that I had the catering company, Pete's Eats, I every year I would sort of think of, man, I really want to open a brick and mortar something. I knew it wasn't going to be a restaurant per se, but I had a different idea every year. And every year, my friend, I would share that with my family and my friends, and they'd be like, wow, that's a really crappy idea. Don't do that. And then 1 year I went into Manhattan to go to Russ and Daughters to pick up stuff for our Christmas brunch. I married a non-Jew, so we get to do Christmas and Hanukkah and Jewish Christmas too. We go to Chinatown as well. It's like the best of all worlds. But we'll get to Chinese food later, I'm sure.
I hope.
And I was waiting online for something like 2 hours and thinking to myself, man, this is ridiculous. Why is this not in my neighborhood? I lived in Carroll Gardens at the time. And I was thinking about it and it was kind of stewing in my brain. And I ran it by my friends and family and they're like, yes, that is the idea. We don't have any money to give you, but you'll figure it out.
And Russ and Daughters is?
Russ and Daughters is sort of, you know, the old gold standard of appetizing shop. Mm-hmm. They're on Houston Street. They've been around for, I think, 80-something years or more by this point. It was always, you know, from the time, it wasn't our appetizing shop growing up that I would go to. We would always either go to Zabar's or Murray Sturgeon Shop on the Upper West Side. But certainly, you know, when I got older, I would go there for my stuff.
So that was your inspiration, was Russ and Daughters. You felt like, why not bring this to my neighborhood?
It was, why not bring this to my neighborhood, but let me apply what I've learned in fine dining and sort of have more of an attention to detail. Try to, you know, obviously stock the things that are old standbys that people expect, but also sort of push the limits a little bit, try to source really cool ingredients, and also try to do as much homemade stuff as we possibly could and apply my sort of chefiness to that. So that's where it came from.
It's interesting because it seems like your background, besides fine dining, but at Pete's Eats, was so eclectic that I would imagine, and I'm assuming, so definitely please correct me.
Assumptions are cool.
They are. They're not bad. And it's positive.
You can totally judge a book.
That's what I do.
Bring it on.
That's absolutely what I do. That's why I'm single.
I think that's the lesson for the day. Yeah.
I think that's the takeaway.
Just judge a book by its cover.
Totally. And then throw it away. But I'm guessing that through the years when you're trying to figure out the one specificity that you wanted to go with food-wise, did you come up with, like, Chinese? Did you have an idea to do, Italian or French?
I had a soup idea that I thought was great that every once in a while I think about it and mention it to my wife, and she's like, that's still a shitty idea. And you're not opening any more places. This place already took you away from me, and no, it ain't happening.
Yeah, the life of a chef, right?
And exactly. But yeah, I think when I decided on this, it sort of made sense because it was the food that I grew up with. So it was sort of going back to that food that I always craved and always loved. Of course, now that I smell it all day and work with it, I can't remember the last time I had a bagel or a bialy with smoked salmon.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you're just around it too much.
Yeah, I'm over it. Like I haven't had a pastrami sandwich in I think a year and a half.
Mm.
I haven't had a bagel in definitely over a year.
Like you won't even go somewhere else and eat that, like outside of your own places.
No, absolutely not. Okay. I have no desire to eat it at all.
Well, you're really selling your whole.
No, it's great.
No,
it's great stuff.
I totally get it.
These aren't, you know, they're foods that have a pretty strong, I mean, lovely smell, but you smell it all day, and I go home and if I take my credit cards out of my pocket, they smell like it. You know, everything sort of has this pickly, which is great. Who doesn't love the smell of pickles and stuff?
Right.
I even love the smell of pickled herring. Because I'm around it all day, I never really want to eat it.
So talking about growing up with this food, can you tell us a little bit more about how food played a role in your upbringing and led you into this career?
Sure. So specifically this kind of food, this was like our every other weekend food, right? Every other Sunday we'd grab it on Saturday afternoons. We'd go down to my grandmother's apartment. She lived on the Lower East Side around the corner from Kozar's Bialy's, which back then was actually really great. And, you know, I remember my father would always buy a couple dozen bialys, and either we'd get a bulgo or a pretzel, a big onion disc, and, you know, it would go into the trunk of the Buick. We had a Merlot or burgundy colored Buick with velour seats. It was
gorgeous.
It was a 78 Buick Limited.
Buick too.
Thing was a boat. It was awesome. and you could smell the fresh bialys just sort of wafting through the car, and we'd always pull over and, you know, and tear into them. So that that sort of was a weekend thing for us. But my mother was always a good cook. She cooked a lot of my grandmother's recipes, and my grandmother sort of, my grandmother came from Germany, but really adopted that sort of mid-century American food. We had Swedish meatballs and shrimp with sour cream and scallions, and just sort of really kind of odd but delicious mid-century food, meatloaf and mashed potatoes and that sort of thing. But she was a really good cook.
Mm-hmm.
My parents are not foodies per se, but we always had dinner together as a family, at least four nights a week, probably more. So, you know, food was always a big deal for us. And in our house now, we're the same way. I mean, I cook dinner, for four nights a week or so. And regardless of whether I cook or not, we're always sitting together as a family, and I'm quite anal about setting up the table properly and you know,
really, even during the week, like,
yeah, two forks and knife, yeah, you know, salad fork.
I love that.
It drives me nuts. Like, my wife will set the table and the napkin will be on the wrong side, and she's French. I'm, like, they're supposed to be proper,
but no. Totally.
I come from this German. Everything's got to be, you know, in place, sort of thing, and that's the way I like it.
Yeah.
That reminds me very much of my upbringing, in terms especially of sitting together every single night. I mean, every single night. I mean, unless we were out on the weekends, but we still would have dinner together. And I think that's so vital and makes food such an important part of what you do. When did you become maybe a little bit more excited about cooking yourself?
I'd say my first food job was when I was in college. I went to Colgate University up in Hamilton, New York, which is not exactly a food destination. I mean, the wings are fantastic. I did work as a delivery boy, and part-time, sometimes fry cook when I had to jump in, and frying wings. And we had this amazing sandwich on the menu called the Ox. And it was basically a buffalo chicken sandwich. It was just ridiculous. It was so good.
Oh my God.
But my first restaurant job after that was at a sushi place. This Jewish couple from New York had moved up. I'm pretty sure they were in witness protection. They were lovely. The two most inappropriate people. That's me saying that they were inappropriate.
Yeah.
I always thought I was the king of inappropriate.
Right. High bar.
Oh my God. Like they would loudly curse in front of customers. They did not give a shit.
You don't strike me as like working in a sushi restaurant.
Well, I did. I washed dishes and I learned some stuff. But when I got out of college, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I was probably going to go into advertising or PR. I went out to New Mexico and hung out with my friend and sort of spent the summer, you know, tripping on shrooms and.
That'll open your brain up.
Doing what a 22-year-old does.
Yeah, that's exactly what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And then when I got back, I started looking for a job, and then 9/11 happened, and there were no jobs. And I actually saw an ad for the Institute of Culinary Education on the subway, and I was like, huh.
Ice, ice, baby.
So I decided to sink some of my bar mitzvah money into that.
Now, how much did you have left over?
And how
20 years
how
later?
How old does a shiksa need to be to have later. Her own bat mitzvah? Or is it just over for me as a non-Jew?
She keeps talking about this as
so
a way
bad.
To pay her rent.
Thank you.
I keep telling her.
I feel like that ship has passed the sail.
You know,
I think so.
How much did you actually get from your bar mitzvah? Do you remember?
If I remember correctly,
$5 million.
It was about 8,000 after all.
Wow.
Told of gifts. Something like that.
And I don't mean to be.
And then my father invested and it grew.
And now it's like $1 billion.
I wish, but I.
How long ago?
This was in 1992.
30 years ago.
Let's just say that money, you know, disappeared.
Yeah.
$18,000 of it went to culinary school, which I think was a very worthy investment.
Yeah, that's
investment.
A great investment.
Absolutely.
The rest of it, you know, let's just, you know, it went somewhere.
Yeah.
to mushroom.
C'est la vie.
Good mushroom. We can see you.
Exactly.
So I just have a little story.
It was
so
fun.
When I was turned 13, I did not get bat mitzvahed, although I am half Jewish, but I did go to a school with a lot of Jews. And so I went to a lot of bar and bat mitzvahs and was very cognizant of how much money and gifts people were getting. And so I asked my parents to throw me a 13th birthday party, and they did, at the Y in Brooklyn.
Nice.
And I
made $13.
I had a little bit more than that. But what I will say is I probably got about $8,000 in Gap gift cards. Because at the time, you guys probably remember, I mean, and I'm totally kidding, I did not get $8,000, but all I got was like $20 Gap gift cards. It was like all the rage at the
That's
time.
That's hysterical.
I don't remember getting anything else.
What's cool is that I also got savings bonds, because that was
a
thing.
That was definitely a thing.
Which when you're 13, you're like, fuck
who
that.
Who the fuck cares
like,
about
who
this?
The fuck cares?
Fuck is a
and
savings
then,
bond? And they're $1.
And then one day, my mother was like, hey, by the way, I think they probably matured by now. And this was right after I graduated from college. And I walked out of the bank with $7,000. I was like,
I hate
wow,
I literally.
Nice.
I hate my upbringing.
Yeah.
So, but you know,
although
did you grow up in Brooklyn?
I did.
Sweet.
In Fort Greene.
Yeah. See, Upper East Side. So,
yeah, you're clearly
I went
much
to
more sophisticated
school.
Than I am.
But I had my very first kiss after a bat mitzvah.
Nice.
So that was thrilling.
That's cool.
Yeah. He happened to be a Jewish boy.
A Jew.
I was going to say a Jew, and then it just came out a Jewish boy. I don't even know what I'm trying to say. In Brookline, Massachusetts, which is where
a lot of Jewish boys live. Brookline and Newton.
Noah Davis.
I've also lived in Brookline.
Are you kidding me?
Yes, when I lived in Boston, I lived in Brookline.
I had no...
We discovered new things about each
other. My only friend from up there is from Newton.
Shut up.
Yeah.
So not far.
Now he's on Bravo.
Who?
That's cool.
Josh Altman.
Shut your... Oh my God, we could go down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, we need to...
Of Million Dollar Listing. Sorry, okay.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, I can't stand him. Although he is... sorry. Jerk-ass people are what you kind of want to be your lawyers and your realtors.
Is it the real estate guy?
He's a million-dollar listing in LA.
We have a photo together with him and his brother, Matt, the three of us, peeing in the ocean at Martha's Vineyard.
You should use that if you ever need it.
We were like 5 years old.
Send us this picture.
It's not as fun.
No, but it's
recent.
No, it was not. That would be weird.
So, food.
That would be weird.
Not by the Altman brothers.
I suppose.
Just saying.
So food clearly plays a big role in everybody's life and in cultures, you know, in general. And so I'm just curious, can you tell us a little bit about the history of the Jewish deli in New York? Because
Sure. It
really is sort of an iconic institution. And I know that there has been a resurgence of it lately. And I'm just curious if you could give us a brief history. I think it's really interesting and how the deli has played a role in Jewish community and culture and what the new Renaissance is all about.
Sure. So Jewish deli and appetizing shops, which is separate from the deli or was separate from the deli, came about when during the first few waves of Jewish immigration from Eastern Europe during the early 20th century. And all those immigrants had a couple things in common for the most part. They were all pretty religious and they were all pretty poor. So because they were religious, they kept kosher, which means the dairy and meat could not be sold in the same place. That was not true for fish and dairy. Fish and dairy could be. So the appetizing shop was born and the delicatessen was born. And because they were poor, they had to smoke, cure, and pickle their meat and their fish
to
make it last longer and to go further. So that's how we got pastrami, corned beef, corn tongue, and smoked and cured salmon, which was lox, mm-hmm. cured salmon, and then Nova Scotia style smoked salmon, which is different than lox. That's how that happened. Hmm. When I first opened Shelsky's, I started hashtagging Jew Food Renaissance. And there's a bunch of us now who have sort of brought back this thing which never really disappeared, but we sort of have been breathing new life into it, which is exciting. We decided to combine. When we first opened, we opened strictly as an appetizing shop. And then after we moved our tiny store, we moved to a larger space on Court Street. I was really adamant about starting doing deli stuff too, and doing pastrami and corned beef and tongue and roast beef and, you know, all that stuff. So we combine the two. I mean, we're not kosher at all. I have no interest in being kosher. I have a pig tattooed on my right arm.
Nice. We'll have to get a picture of that later.
Yeah, it's there.
Oh, wow, the whole pig.
There it is.
I have a fish too.
Oh, that's impressive artwork.
My knife and my newest one, which I just got last week.
Oh, wow.
This.
What does that mean?
It says General Tso's chicken in traditional Chinese.
General Tso's?
General Tso's chicken. Yeah. It's a sort of a double commentary on the schmucks who think they're getting warrior, but really it says like beef with broccoli.
I love
that. And the Jewish love affair with Americanized Chinese food.
Right, right.
So it does say General Tso's chicken.
That's amazing.
It says the chicken belonging to, you know, the honorable General Zhao, which is got. You know, Americanized.
I did go to a Chinese. I did go to a Chinese restaurant once that had General Tso's, T-O-E-S, like on the menu.
I am obsessed with typos and funny translations in Chinese restaurants. But there's a wonderful restaurant up in Sunset Park called Yunnan Flavor Garden, and their old menus. One of the things they have on the menu is marinated wood's ear mushrooms.
Okay.
And the old menu has them listed as Jew's ears mushrooms. Oh, and someone must have said to them, "Hey guys, you know, maybe you should change this." And I haven't seen one of those old menus in a long time, but oh man, we used to get such a laugh out of that.
When you go to Thailand, you're just saying you're going to make a trip over there. I did go to Thailand many years ago, and I think, and actually, this is probably true of most places where you travel, but when they give you, a lot of times they'll give you a menu in English.
Oh, yeah.
And the translation sometimes is so funny. Like it can be completely literal or like just the typos. Or the misuse of words, you're just like, this is hilarious. I'm sorry to interrupt.
The very first time I ever did karaoke was down in Chinatown, and talking about translations, the song was 9 to 5, and I thought it was a song I knew.
Song.
It's one of the best. This was a million years ago, and I thought I knew all the words, but you look at the screen, and it's a total phonetic translation of, and I was on the floor in the fetal position cracking up. So I was like, if Dolly Parton could see what you've done to her words, it was like Perkin Pine to fly. I have no idea. And my girlfriend is literally reading it because she doesn't know, you know, she doesn't know the words to the song. And I'm like, Cara, those are not
working 9 to 5.
That's awesome.
The words. Right. Anyway, go ahead.
No, I'm just curious. So are most of your customers Jewish, or does it really run the gamut?
I'd say most, but it's probably around 60-something, 70%. Okay. I mean, drop your drawers. Let me see. Are you snipped?
I bring my Bible everywhere with me so people know my religious affiliation.
Of God, obviously. Yes, of course. You seem like the kind of person
she's
that
super
very
Catholic.
Religious.
Mage. Yeah. So you would definitely know me.
Yeah.
But I bet there's so many hipsters.
There are. I mean, look, I swipe a lot of credit cards, and I don't even know what you swipe.
You.
I have. I'm.
Ugh,
I don't know.
Neither of you have ever done online dating. It's terrible.
I did. I J-date before I married my shiksa wife.
People say I should go on J-date all the time.
Listen, there are definitely non-Jews looking for Jewish men.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would never look for one particular kind of man, but
you know,
apparently
she's open to anyone.
Seriously, there,
why
if
not?
You know,
literally anyone.
Okay, I'll keep my eyes. I was thinking of
Peter.
Having like sort of a matchmaker like board in my store. I think it'd be pretty cute.
You should totally do that.
That would be adorable. Has anybody faked an orgasm in either of your shops? Like in Katz's.
You're referring to
like in Katz's,
like when Harry met Sally. Right.
I mean, who needs to fake?
Yeah, so true.
When you're around.
True, Peter. Yeah.
You know.
That's what every man says. Go ahead.
So, no, I was going to get back to the more historical portion of this episode. No, but I did. What I thought was really interesting when I did do a little research about this was that it seems like the Jewish delicatessen over the years has really been like a gathering place for Jews. I mean, that's some of what the discussion is about. And I think there's a recent book that came out sort of depicting, you know, historical analysis of it. And I thought it was really interesting because it maybe not replaced, you know, services on Friday nights, but it became like a place for Jews to hang out in a place where they didn't feel totally uncomfortable. This was before maybe they were as assimilated as they are now. And it kind of reminded me as I was reading about it, a similar scenario for the Black community in barbershops. Like, that's how I read it. Like, it was really like a gathering place for people for, you know, to feel comfortable and just hang out or whatever. Is that something that you experienced firsthand or that you know any more about?
I didn't experience it firsthand. I didn't eat a whole lot of deli growing up only because I grew up in the 80s when like cholesterol became a thing. And my mother was like, you know, this is like a once every couple months we can go to Second Avenue Deli thing. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. People do get together at my store. I think obviously times have changed, and I don't know that that is something that goes on today.
Yeah.
But certainly.
Yeah, I don't think it was. They meant today. This was many decades ago.
You know, also delis and appetizing shops used to dot every neighborhood.
Yeah.
Throughout Brooklyn and largely Queens and the Bronx, and they started dropping like flies one by one. Sort of a couple forces worked against them. Firstly, the Jewish communities in Brooklyn got increasingly religious, and the ones that weren't sort of, you know, as immigrant communities had their kids, and this happens with many different immigrant communities, and those kids went to school and sort of got out of blue collar jobs and started, you know, becoming lawyers and doctors and started embracing white collar jobs more. People, quote unquote, escaped Brooklyn. I mean, when I said to my grandmother I was moving to Brooklyn, she said, why?
Yeah, that's what my mother-in-law says. She can't get over the fact that she grew up in Borough Park, and she cannot fathom why on earth me and Theo, her son, would move to Brooklyn.
Borough Park's love. I live right near. I mean, I live.
When she grew up, it was very suffocating for a Jewish woman growing up in the 30s who wanted to do something with her life other than, you know, raise children. A very different life and a very different experience than the Brooklyn. I think that some of us, not including Sarah, although I have to say, you are here a lot now.
It's my second home.
It really
it's
has
my
become
adopted
that.
Home.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Park Slope is like the Upper West Side, I'd say.
Oh, yeah. I can see
well,
that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I do love it here in this fabulous studio, but I find myself more in Cobble Hill and Williamsburg due to her studios and, you know, just following Katie around as often as
like,
I can.
Oh my God.
So I don't know.
I like Cobble Hill
a
lot.
And Carroll Gardens. I used to go there quite a bit. I love it. Smells so good to me.
We used to live in Carroll Gardens and now in the Hasidic section of Kensington. So we live in Kensington.
That sounds British, not Hasidic. But
it's not Kensington. It's Kensington.
So can we talk bagels? Because
we can
know
definitely let's
Sarah
talk.
Really
let's
want,
talk some bagels.
I live bagels. Some bagels.
Yeah.
Let's have a chewy conversation.
Let's do it. So you opened up a bagel shop. How many years ago?
One.
Okay. as the owners of small businesses, we have understand what it's like to open these things, and initially
sucks,
you're like,
it?
What the fuck?
Yeah, I'm still a year in, I'm still like, what the fuck was
I
thinking?
Yeah.
So yeah, we opened because for a couple reasons. First of all, I was really bummed about the state of affairs of bagels in the city. They've gotten big, they've gotten soft, and they've gotten generally shitty. And it was the natural extension. We were buying our bagels from a place out in Mill Basin, Brooklyn. They were great, dense, chewy bagels with a nice crust, but we really wanted to start making our own. And, you know, we have ideas about what bagels should be and should look like. And that's something smaller, a profound crust with a dense, chewy interior. So we set out to do that.
Now, I've done a little research as well. Katie's hasn't cornered the market on that.
Sweet.
I enlisted a friend of mine. His name is George Motes.
Ah.
And he is a fan of yours.
I am a fan of his.
We actually, he was the first person we interviewed for our podcast.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. You should listen to our podcast.
I should. I love his mutton chops.
He has amazing mutton. We did discuss his mutton chops on the podcast.
His
yeah.
hair is a very big deal.
It has its own personality.
Yeah, I'm kind of jealous of his hair.
No, you should be. Well,
I'm jealous of anybody that has
hair on their head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's all good. But he was saying one that you hired Matt Tilden to help develop, I'm guessing, this dense campaign. There's got to be a better word.
He would be upset with me if I didn't mention that he prefers to be called Matthew.
Oh, Matthew. Oh, really?
He does.
Okay. Well, George Motes. I hope you heard that. So tell me more about finding the perfect bagel.
So we, you know, Matthew is a bread whisperer or a dough whisperer, if you will.
Katie's
we didn't know each other well. We knew each other, you know, I knew of his business and what he did, and we knew each other from just being the food world online and through Facebook, and because that's what us old folks use. We knew each other from TikTok. I love
Snapchat. Were you guys?
So I reached out to him for some help, and he came at us with some great ideas and helped out quite a bit with the bagel product, and ultimately because of him, we settled on a sourdough starter and a 3-day ferment. So our bagels take a solid 3 days to make.
Where does that fall?
Pain in the ass? Yes, it is.
On the spectrum, where does that fall? I mean, I just have no idea.
It's, you know, longer than most bagel shops.
Usually it's like one day, would you say?
Usually it's, you know, overnight, and very few people are using a natural sourdough starter. Mm. Our bagels aren't sour, but they certainly have a good amount
That's
of complexity.
The
The density is achieved elsewhere, You know, it's an important component. We're anti-toasting. Mm. We will toast because we are in the service industry, and we want to, you know, sort of give people.
But that's after you spit in the person's face.
Yeah.
You know, we'll judge them.
Yeah. One of my first jobs was at a bagel shop. But
did you toast a lot?
I did toast a lot, and I always ask for toasted. Yeah, this was in Princeton.
It's acceptable, I feel like, with butter. Because
I never get butter.
Didn't de Blasio get in trouble for saying one of his, what was the whole deal with his like favorite bagel
the
shop?
The motherfucker
or
cuts pizza with a knife and fork. Who gives a shit what he thinks?
He doesn't know shit. Bad.
Like, come on. Like, he's a bumbling idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me tell you how I really feel.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
No, you're just really holding back.
Just hold back a little.
So, Moat says that your best spread is Sichuan.
Oh, the Sichuan peppercorn.
What is in it? And I did read about your pepper and salt.
Yes, the cracked pepper and salt. So I'll tell you about the Sichuan bagel first. So
I'm literally
that came about because I think we already mentioned the Jewish love affair with Chinese food. Mm-hmm. I am, and we'll get to this later,
yes.
I am obsessed with Chinese
food. We're not talking about that yet. Come on, stop it.
But I love, I really, it's when I tell you that Chinese food is my life, Chinese food is my life. I actually went to Sichuan province a couple years ago with a friend. My wife said it was my 40th birthday. And she's like, you know what? I asked her, I was like, do you mind if I go to China? Because I knew she wouldn't want to go to China with me. I was like, do you mind if I take my summer vacation alone? I want to go to China. She's like, yeah, I mean, I think it's better if you go with someone. So I went with my roommate from my senior year of college who speaks fluent Mandarin. So that helped.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
And we went to Hong Kong, Shanghai, and Chengdu, which is the capital of Sichuan province. That city, I found my people. I mean, they are food-obsessed people. And they were lovely, and they were so excited to have foreigners who were so into their food, which was great. So I came back with a new appreciation of Sichuan cuisine, which I already had quite a bit of anyway. And
you had never been.
I had never been. Okay. But there's a lot of, I mean, Sichuan has been having quite a moment in New York and worldwide, actually. And even in China, all over China, Sichuan is really having a moment. There's somebody down in Nashville, Tennessee. Her name is Taylor. And she also became obsessed with Sichuan food. And she started a company importing really high-end ingredients from there. So we buy these like single plantation Sichuan peppercorns, which numb your mouth. They have they're the bud of the prickly ass tree, and they're in the citrus.
Prickly ass?
Yes, prickly ass.
Oh, that's exactly. Awesome.
They numb your mouth, which is this lovely sensation. And we grind them up and mix them into the bagel dough.
Wow.
And top those bagels with black and white sesame seeds. And they're just great. And we do a cream cheese mixed with chili crisp or laoguama, which is great because why not put MSG and chili oil and crispy bits in cream cheese?
Yes, please.
We actually have a sandwich with that on it, on that Sichuan bagel with cilantro and cucumber called the Jewish Christmas.
Wow.
So that's
I'm getting hungry.
I'm about to explode.
And the cracked pepper and salt bagel is sort of a bagel au poivre. And my now 12-year-old, she came up with it when she was like 10. It was her idea because she's a black pepper like fiend.
Oh, that's so funny.
It's she just loves everything with tons of black pepper in it. So she one day she's like, "How about a black pepper bagel?" Holy shit, that's a great idea.
And with salt, I bet that's
yeah, some pretzel salt, and we use cracked. I mean, you get big bits of cracked pepper. It's pretty. I mean, it's coated in it, so it's a pretty tasty bagel.
And what do you like on your bagel?
I am a plain cream cheese guy. I actually don't even like salmon on my bagel. If I'm going to have smoked salmon, I prefer it on a very well toasted bialy. Mm-hmm. I grew up eating bialys more than bagels, I like bialys more.
And what if you do eat bagels, what kind of bagels do you eat?
I love a sesame seed bagel. I think I don't understand plain bagels. I don't understand why people eat plain bagels. It's just a ball of dough. Mm. sesame bagels are great. We actually put a little bit of pretzel salt on our sesame bagels too, which, I mean, that's a game changer. You really taste the sesame a whole lot more.
Do you have veggie cream cheese or is that
we do
like
have veggie
loser?
Cream cheese. No, we have veggie cream cheese.
Okay.
We don't have any sweet cream cheeses. We don't believe in any
like
of
strawberry.
Strawberry. Like, absolutely not.
What's the most popular thing that's ordered at your bagel shop, would you say?
The member of the tribe. It's a bagel with smoked salmon and cream cheese.
Yeah.
We sell a whole lot of those.
My favorite at your place is the Tribute.
The Tribute's great, and that's actually a tribute to Russ and Daughters.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I mean, our whitefish salad is better, but...
It's whitefish salad, horseradish...
It's horseradish cream cheese. It's horseradish cream cheese,
right, and wasabi tabico.
Correct.
What's wasabi tabico?
It is a highly processed...
I love processed food.
It is highly processed. It's a wonderful...
True story.
It's a wonderful food stuff. It's... Tobiko is flying fish roe.
Tobiko, you get it like on Japanese food, like they'll put it as a topping,
the tiny
like
little
on
fish
the,
eggs.
Those orange fish eggs.
Yes.
On, like,
so this is these are green.
This is green.
And they're wasabi
flavored.
Okay, because I like to call it caviar.
Caviar is only black.
Just kidding.
That's because she's fancy and she lives
I'm
on the Upper East
so
Side.
Fancy. So you have caviar on your menu.
We do have caviar.
Yeah,
I have a question for you. How do you name the sandwiches? Because you do have really interesting, sometimes funny names.
And would you ever consider calling one of them Kind of Obsessed?
We could work on a sandwich together.
It depends on how much we can, you know.
I mean, we normally don't name our sandwiches after people.
It wouldn't be after us.
So there are a few people that do have sandwiches named after them, but it's a select few.
Okay.
And who are they?
My real estate agent.
Of course.
Why?
Josh Altman?
No, not him. But my very good friend, Alex Turboff. The Turboff is named after her.
Oh.
And she's been a good friend long
before
she
was
my agent. It's great. It's horseradish cream cheese, baked salmon salad, Nova, tomato, onions, capers, and a nice squeeze of lemon juice.
Ooh.
On a well-toasted bialy. We'll do it on a bagel, but it is much better on a bialy. Mm.
Do you just toast bialys?
Bialys should be toasted.
Got it. See, I don't know.
They are much, it's like pizza. It's better when it's well done.
And what's the other?
The other one, well, I have a sandwich named after me, which I invented when I was like 11.
Such an egomaniac.
I know. You nailed it.
Really self-involved.
My daughter has a sandwich named after her because Ginger has not come up with a sandwich yet, but Clementine invented the sandwich. It's a toasted bialy.
Ginger
butter.
Is your other child's name?
Clementine and Ginger.
I'm obsessed. Go ahead. So Clementine.
We do have a Clementine and Ginger Rugla, by the way.
Oh, that's awesome. Your Rugla is amazing. We do, but we shop there and get a bunch of stuff, but it is so good.
Have you had it when it's like pretty fresh out of the oven? It's still warm and gooey.
No.
Been there.
It's been in the little case and it's still delicious.
You got to luck out with the timing on that.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
And what's the deal with Rugla? It's like.
It's a rolled cookie that's filled with a different assortment of fillings.
And what is the Clementine ginger Rugla?
It has Clementine preserves and candied ginger.
God, that is
anyway, the
so
Clementine sandwich is Gravlax, or house cured Gravlax, on a buttered toasted bialy with tomatoes, onions, capers, and lemon.
And this was invented by your 10-year-old daughter.
She was like 9 at the time.
Oh, 9, yeah.
She's
got a sophisticated palate.
She's got an extremely sophisticated palate.
So what's the process for coming up with the sandwiches and then getting them to the menu?
So the process has slowed down. We don't add things often anymore. But either it's something that a customer will keep ordering or ordering over
like
and over
their own
over
creation
again.
Yeah, kind
and then
of thing. Yeah.
We'll be like, well, shit, we got to try this. And sometimes it sucks. Like egg salad with Nova is fucking gross.
That sounds terrible.
That is disgusting.
Sometimes it just works, and we'll name a sandwich after someone.
Do you have, but like, in addition to yourself, are there other people that you're like, here, try this, tell me what you think? Like, how do you know it's going to do
We don't. I mean, they're saying it's like, how does a record producer know that they created a hit?
Uh-huh.
They know because it's got a great hook, and you know what a great hook is. Well, I flavor wise, I know what's going to be, you know, we have a sandwich called the Great Gatsby. And it's called the Great Gatsby because it's served on caraway seeded rye. I probably should have called it the Anti-Gatsby, but whatever. What's funny is that I absolutely hate that book. I've read it three times.
Don't
and
tell
it's just
F. Scott.
It's so utterly mediocre. Anyway, it's a caraway seeded rye with horseradish, cream cheese, pastrami, smoked salmon, honey mustard, and red onion. And it just, everything marries between the sweet tang of the mustard and the creamy bite of the horseradish cream cheese, and the pepperiness and smokiness and saltiness of the salmon, and the crunchiness of the rye. It just, I knew that, you know, once people buy it, I mean, I more so with that sandwich than any others, I get, holy crap, this is the best sandwich I've ever eaten.
Wow. How many different ones do you have?
A lot.
Okay.
Over 20.
Okay.
Probably closer to 30, come to think of it.
The way you describe food makes you feel like you're tasting it right now. It's kind
of extraordinary. I was
going to
say, I can see how you would have gone into advertising, because you do a really good job at sort of like, yeah, like she said, describing it. And
yeah, I mean,
I get excited about food.
Yeah.
And
I do too, which makes me.
I let that excitement just come right out.
Fumble over my words when it comes to food. I know that you said that you haven't considered or don't even want to consider opening another place.
Right.
If you had to, if money was no option, I mean, money was no option. Money was no object, and time and all of the other stuff that goes into running one, what would you open?
There is something that I ate in Chengdu that it is not prevalent here. We recently did our sort of Jewified version of that in a collaboration with Little Tong Noodle Shop on the Lower East Side. It's called a guo kui. And there are two versions, there are multiple versions of a guo kui, but in Chengdu, these two versions, there's the stuffed variety, which is basically almost like a pita pocket that's stuffed with thinly sliced meats, usually pork. I had one in Chengdu that was sliced pig snout. It was delicious.
Anything on
with
a pig
chili
is
oil,
delicious.
Yeah, with chili yeah. oil and black vinegar and some sliced vegetables and cilantro. It was just wonderful. And the other version is a fried version, which is imagine like a really thick scallion pancake with all the layers, flaky layers with either ground beef or ground pork mixed in, that's sort of tinged with Sichuan peppercorn and ginger. So it's got that numbing sensation, the ma, they call it ma sensation. And they're everywhere in Chengdu, and some are better than others, obviously. But that would be such a night. I would do like we sell two things, a super narrow, you know, small footprint place, with a small footprint menu that just does two things perfectly. I mean, it's not going to happen because my wife just is like, you're not doing that again.
No. But that's really cool. And that's what a great thing to introduce to.
Yeah, it'd be great. You know? And then, you know, it's 2020, so I'd be accused of cultural appropriation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Which would be a fair criticism to be
But
sure.
I mean, you just love it, so.
I do.
Yeah. What do you think is the fascination with Chinese food? For you and for Jews in general, you were talking about it earlier.
Well, I mean, it probably comes down to the fact that it is what we eat on Christmas.
That's
the only thing open on
right.
Christmas, that and movie theaters. It's also what we do on Sundays. It probably also comes from all the Chinese buffet places up in the Borscht Belt, which is a thing. And I don't know. I can tell you from my perspective, I love the diversity of the different cuisines of China.
China is such a massive place. I mean, I've never been there. I can imagine it just really varies depending on the region that you're in. Is that right? I mean, and it's such an ancient culture.
It is, and
well.
I haven't explored enough. I really want to go back and just sort of get lost in China. And there's so many different places I really desperately want to go. It's very disarming to be in a place where nobody looks like you, and nobody or very few people speak the language you speak, and nothing is written with English letters. And it's refreshing, and it's. I mean, I in Chengdu, I went 3 full days without seeing a non-Asian face.
Wow.
And I was on the subway during rush hour, and a black girl got on the train, like on the other end of the train, who she was clearly coming from work. I mean, she was dressed in business attire, and I felt like kind of waving at her and being like, hey, we should talk. you know, she was probably German.
right.
Sprechen Sie Deutsch?
What are your like top 3 places to eat right now in New York or anywhere?
Top 3 places. Wow. We discovered this restaurant thanks to Pete Wells of the New York Times. He wrote up a restaurant called Village Cafe a couple years ago, and it's an Azerbaijani restaurant out on Coney Island Avenue and Avenue P. And it is so dope. It's this weird restaurant. It's like some random family from some random country decided to move to upstate New York and bought an old diner. And I was like, we put our restaurant here. And it's set back in the back of a parking lot of a liquor store.
There are a lot of I've eaten Uzbeki.
There's a lot of Uzbeki
food,
by
like
me.
In
a lot of
Coney Island, which is really
there's
good.
There's some good Uzbeki and there's some kind of crappy Uzbeki.
Yeah.
There's only two.
But Azerbaijani.
There's only two restaurants, and there's one right by me. It's
okay.
Called the Old Baku.
Okay.
I haven't been there, and from what I've heard, it's just not as good as Village Cafe. and Village Cafe, it's a pleasure eating there. It's a big restaurant with, it's got big screen TVs with Russian music videos playing that don't match the music that's playing in the restaurant. It's got some totally unintended kitsch to it.
Yeah.
For some, it's not a kosher spot, but it's got
not
a,
ironic it, down
right.
there.
Right. And it's got a,
which
fo-
is so
they've got a
funny.
Photo of Rebbe Schneerson on the wall, which is weird because it's not kosher. it's just a great place with, they grill everything over charcoal. They have amazing salads and amazing soups. They do magical things with lamb. I'm a big liver guy, and they do great things with liver.
You lost me.
I like all. They have a dish called, I shit you not, it's called Jizz Biz.
Stop.
It's spelled DJIZZ.
All right. Silent D.
It's called Jizz Biz. And it's lamb, livers, kidneys, hearts, intestines.
Oh,
it's a hash
Theo
with potatoes and
that.
Onions. And it's great if you like.
Yeah.
You gotta eat it with your eyes closed.
And
your nose.
I got my Upper East Side Jewish mother to eat lamb testicles. And she was like,
well, I love balls.
She was like, listen, balls, you know?
She loves eating balls, but not on a
not
plate.
Not liver.
Liver's
that's
great.
Gross.
No, liver's
kidding.
Awesome.
My mother loves liver.
I'm a big liver guy.
Wow, that's fascinating. Okay, you have 2 more.
So I love that. Man, that's tough. I can't even say I have a single pizza place of choice. My regular, ordinary slice joint of choice is Luigi's in South Slope. I think it's great. Gio does great things. Although there's so much great new pizza out there, I've been on a big pizza kick lately. My wife and kids and I last weekend did a bang bang bang, which is 3 dinners in one instead of a bang bang, which is 2 dinners. We did 3 dinners in a row, three small dinners in a row. So we started at Le Industry in Williamsburg, which was a great slice.
Oh.
And then we went to Philomena's, which is on Queens Boulevard. It was awesome. Wow, what this guy is doing with pizza is just stunning. And then we went for birria tacos at the Birria Landia taco truck, which Pete Wells also gave 2 stars to in his.
Where is that?
It's in, I guess you'd say it's Jackson Heights.
Theo just took us to Jackson Heights to this great taqueria down there.
Jackson
it's
Heights is
up
dope.
There.
It's
like all these countries in the world just in one place.
Yeah, I mean, Queens in general. I mean, you get out of
Queens
the car in any neighborhood and it's just like, oh my God, what do I eat? There's so much good to eat.
For someone like you, especially like a foodie, Queens
it's
is
a wet dream.
A mecca.
It's incredible.
Jizz biz?
It is the jizz biz.
It's the jizz biz.
I think
we found our new podcast episode name.
But
totally.
it's tough for me
the
to
jizz
pick
biz.
3 restaurants that are,
yeah.
I mean, it's really, really difficult.
What about, I know you spoke a little bit earlier about French cuisine. Where do you like to go for that?
I can't remember the last time I ate French food in New York.
Okay.
You know, I think there's a whole preponderance of bistros in the city that are just kind of mediocre.
Crap.
And I mean, if I wanted, I cook it.
Yeah.
That's just the bottom line.
What are your thoughts on rainbow bagels?
Get the fuck out of here.
And green bagels.
Moats asked her to ask you that.
Green bagels, listen, March 17th.
It's coming up. He makes money, I'm sure.
We do red bagels on Valentine's.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
We do green bagels on
He doesn't even like toasting, but he can make a green bagel.
Yeah, it's because people buy it.
It's cute and whatever.
It's not cute, but people will buy it. I'm just kidding. It's cute.
It is what it is. Yeah. It's cool.
You know what? I'll eat anything you make.
On Puerto Rican Day, we do a Puerto Rican flag. No, we don't.
Do a J-Lo bagel?
We don't.
A booty bagel?
But that's actually not a bad idea.
Yeah, you're welcome.
As long as you name it the Sarah Giller.
Yeah. People will be like, the who? But she has a sweet ass. Just be honest with yourself. I'll talk about my ass in the third person any day of the week.
You can talk about your ass, but I'm going to come back and talk about my wife's ass.
Oh, wow.
Ass against a French ass?
You know, my wife and I met working in a restaurant together. She was the GM and at the time I was like the bitch in the basement peeling potatoes and killing lobsters and stuff. But I couldn't stand her because she was the boss.
Yeah,
and
they're the worst.
She's Parisian, so but I used to follow her up the stairs because
she had a nice ass,
and it has all these years later.
What restaurant?
Valse. It's an Austrian restaurant in the West Village.
Oh, I don't know that.
You should check it out. It's a really great date night restaurant.
Oh, fantastic. I'll take no one there. Thanks a lot.
I don't know
it's
if
great,
I...
and it's great, and it's you know, there's fun celebrity watching.
Does she still work in the restaurant business?
No, she wised up and works in education now. She's in the tutoring business.
Oh, very good.
She doesn't tutor. She does administration.
So, Peter, we always ask our guests what they're kind of obsessed with, and we would like to know from you, what are you kind of obsessed with these
days?
Aside
from my wife.
And
yes,
you know what? Enough about your wife. No, I'm just kidding.
She's amazing.
She's the best.
Aww. She's awesome.
How long have you been married?
15 years.
Ugh.
It was our anniversary was the day before Valentine's Day.
May have stalked you on Instagram, so I did see that.
Where do we eat dinner for our anniversary?
Place you eat dinner at every time.
No. We went to Cote, the Korean barbecue meets high-end American steakhouse, which if you haven't been, is...
Where is that?
It's on 22nd Street.
Theo and I did eat there.
It's really good. And their prices are
it's amazing. They have
totally
like the
reasonable
thing on the table.
Yeah.
That sounds like a great date place.
It's a great date,
especially
place,
with someone like my wife who is a total red meat carnivore.
Oh, me too.
So it was a stunning meal. And then we went to go see Parasite. So we were all up in the Korean.
I have got to see that. The rest of the movie, I watched half of it on the plane to Miami with Katie.
It's a beautiful
and
movie.
I loved it. I definitely think it needs a bigger than a behind the scenes.
My obsession is Chinese food. I would eat it way more often if my wife would be down.
And you cook it at home?
I cook it at home. I like all manners of regional Chinese, and I like Americanized Chinese. I'll gladly.
And it is quite different. Is that that's not a myth? Like it's very different.
I mean, look, Americanized Chinese food definitely was born out of Cantonese food. There's a whole lot of difference. I mean, it's American Chinese food is cloyingly sweet and excessively greasy. You know, MSG is freely used in both. Which is a great thing. I love cooking with MSG, and I keep a big bag of it at home.
Does it preserve the food? Is that the original?
No,
it flavors it. It is a
umami bomb. It just enhances the flavor of anything that's savory. It brings out even more savoriness.
Hmm.
You know, you can overdo it, and you can trigger a migraine if you do overdo it. But if you don't overdo it, it is a really great weapon to have in your kitchen.
Hmm.
I'm actually going, I went out for hot pot. Actually, yeah, there's a restaurant. I've been going to Jiang Hot Pot on Fort Hamilton Parkway. It's sort of on the Diker Bensonhurst Sunset Park border. And it is an import from China, and it is some seriously great hot pot.
Hmm.
I've been going there more often than I probably should, but it's great.
I need to get a list of all of, like, you should have some sort of a rating system somewhere.
I should.
Because you're so fabulous
treasure
about
trove
what it is that you like and very specific about why you like things. And every single place you've spoken about today, I've never heard of.
And I can tell you every dish I've had at every restaurant I've pretty much ever eaten at.
I
have a very, like, I don't know what you would call a photographic memory of the tongue, but
A flavor palette memory.
I remember all those things.
So what's next for you? Anything big coming up for you?
I started working on a blog.
Oh,
remember those things?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I started working on a blog. It has not launched yet. And I started working on my first piece for it, which is why I think cast iron pans are not always suited for home use and they're kind of overrated.
That's the topic of the first blog.
Yeah.
Wow.
How everyone writes about how awesome cast iron is. And for the most part, it's a pain in the ass at home.
Oh.
It is a good weapon, though.
It's a great weapon if you can lift it.
Well, this is good because I don't own any cast iron, and now I feel much better.
You know, it's great if you have induction burners, but the problem is, one of the problems is that most of us have crappy home stoves, and the burners are very uneven. And while cast iron holds its heat really well, it is not an even conductor. Mm. So if you were to point an infrared thermometer at it, when it's on your stove, it's got severe hot spots and cool spots. So you don't get an even sear on something.
What's your home kitchen like?
Relatively small, but I have a 5-foot by 3-foot butcher block countertop that I brought with me from my other apartment that was part of a table. But it gives me plenty of counter space. My kitchen has sort of started vomiting out into my dining room. Which doesn't thrill my wife.
That's a lovely image for a kitchen. Thank you.
Especially when talking about food.
I've got so much equipment that just, it's like,
coming out every
all sorts of places. Hole. But my kitchen, it's very workable because, as I mentioned, I'm in a Hasidic neighborhood. My new construction building was built with Orthodox Jews in mind. So my kitchen has 2 sinks,
mm-hmm.
which is super convenient to have one as just a drying sink with a drying rack over it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of great.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on dinner parties and inviting 2 really adorable hosts from a podcast you recently did? Over?
I'm down with that. I just had my last dinner party was last week. I made a cassoulet, which took me 2 weeks to make.
Okay. You know,
I dry aged the duck and I made my own confit. I made my own sausage.
What are your dinner parties like? Like, who's there? Like, what do you make?
I just invite a random group of friends and
put out an ad on Craigslist.
I definitely do not do that. Okay. Ad on Craigslist. You know, like, I work the drive through window at McDonald's.
I'm not sure I believe
like,
that.
Like, really?
Peter,
you do? But... You work the drive through window, the first window or second window?
Just
you take the money or give the food.
such a distinction.
Such a distinction. I like to do cooking projects, so they're very much centered around, you know, I decide to make something and then I'm like, oh shit, we should probably invite some people over because this is going to be a lot of food.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you have
they're themed. So, you know,
do we have to dress up?
If I'm making Chinese food, then there will be Chinese snacks.
Perfect.
No, we played jazz at, you know,
at a Chinese night,
you know,
why not?
Cause like,
I'm just kidding. Works.
Sometimes, you know, NPR doesn't work.
while
I cook, I listen to NPR while I cook.
Oh.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I want to eat all your food.
Everybody should check out your places. I mean, if you live in Brooklyn or are coming to visit, Shelsky's of Brooklyn Appetizing and Delicatessen, very fancy name, and also Shelsky's Brooklyn Bagels. Do you deliver at all?
We are on Tri Caviar and Seamless Grubhub for catering, and we do quite a bit of catering. We do deliver for that. You know, bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs, day after wedding brunches, shiva, you know, these things happen. And brisses, like, you're going to snip 20% of your kid's dick off.
Yeah,
you got to eat lots.
You
got to
have lots.
I'll save that story. I was going to talk about my son's.
Oh, sweet.
But never mind.
God,
but
can you deliver to the Upper East?
For a catered event, sure.
Oh, no.
Tell our listeners and Sarah, who was out of the room, the last podcast you were on was called what?
The show is called Processing, and it's about the intersection of grief and food. And I was on to discuss Shiva, and the name of the episode was "Your Shiva We Deliver," which is one of our
Isn't that amazing?
Which is one of our slogans that we have on a T-shirt.
Oh my
which I mentioned on that podcast, and it's something that's good to mention. I've put that on my A-frame sign in front of the store.
Your A-frame sign is amazing in front of your shop.
I tend to get fairly political and anti-Trump, but I've written
You don't like Trump?
Well, one is like you talk about how there's two, like Trump sucks, but at least there's two lox eating.
Yeah, the right now it's like can we just acknowledge that they're two bagel and lox eaters running for president? Doesn't matter how you feel about either one of them.
Right, exactly. That's an accomplishment.
Deal.
It's a
huge deal.
That's how interesting these political times are, is that in a lot of ways it's great. Nobody's even talking about that because of how fucked up everything else is.
Yeah, like there's a chance that we might just get a Jew. Crazy. I frankly don't think it's going to happen. And
bagels for everybody, do you think? If that happens,
Who knows?
Yeah, like just throw them all around.
Maybe they'll finally get a nice looking menorah, not that shitty, gigantic, ugly thing in D.C. But
isn't it a bush?
But then again, we've had 45 presidents, 44 of them have been Protestants, and look at that fucking ugly Christmas tree they have. It doesn't hold a candle.
Who's the one Catholic is JFK?
JFK is the one.
It's the only non-Protestant.
But we have had a gay president.
Who?
I think it was Garfield was
really?
Speaking of which, because we're on Garfield.
We are.
He was the bachelor president, and by all accounts, had a fairly open gay relationship. Of course, there was no Facebook and Insta at the time, and 24-hour news cycle.
I love how you are talking about Facebook like it's a popular.
It is
thing
for people,
to you.
What's Facebook?
You know, our age.
No, like my dad.
Whatever.
It was.
It's, you know, I actually have been considering stopping because it is not good for your
And mental. it's gonna keep getting worse, especially as the year progresses
anyway,
near
your
election day.
We deliver. I would just.
I want that
woman,
T-shirt.
This
I need
woman
swag.
Came in and said she saw the sign and she's like, you know, that's really offensive. How can you say that? And a week before this, I mentioned this to her. I was like, you know, this lady came in a week before when I had the sign out, and she said, you know, I lost my husband 3 weeks ago, and seeing your sign, this was the first time I laughed in 3 weeks.
Mm.
And you know, look, you got to have levity in these situations, and if you know, Jews, if we're not good at whatever, we're good at laughing at ourselves,
right.
You know, and feeding our grief.
And, you know, that and don't serve leftovers at your son's bris.
Sure. Let that be a lesson
Shelsky's
to all
a cut,
of us.
A cut above the rest.
Nice.
Tipping not required.
Oh, my God. This is the perfect place to end this.
I agree. I mean,
oh my
it doesn't
God,
that get
was
better
such a
than
blast.
That. Well, thank you so much
thank
for coming
you.
On. We really
Thanks
enjoyed
for having
talking
me.
To you.
It was a pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Mazel.